It's time to go deep for the exclusive info you need on the hockey team you love.
A shot, a score!
This is Preds Insiders with your host, Ryan Porth, on your flagship home of the Predators Radio Network, Smashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game.
Welcome into Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, right here, your home for the Nashville Predators, who are back at it tomorrow night against the Vegas Golden Knights as they resume a five-game homestand that started Tuesday night against the Edmonton Oilers with a 2-1 win before a five-day bye week. And now they are back at practice, back and ready to go to face the Vegas Golden Knights. Joining me tonight in studio for Preds Insiders, look, the All-Star game is on Sunday, January 28th. But I've got two All-Stars in here in studio with me tonight in the Wholesale Inc. Mount Juliet Game Studios that, I mean, they just rock your socks off when talking Preds. To my left, it is Robbie Stanley of NHL.com.
You've got at least one other All-Star. I don't know if I put myself in that category.
You are an All-Star, Robbie.
Thank you.
Do not sell yourself short.
I appreciate it.
To my right is the one and only C-Mace, Chris Mason, former Preds goalie and current TV analyst on Fox Sports Tennessee. Chris, thanks for coming by the studio tonight.
Thanks for having me. I also do not consider myself an all-star, but with this crew, I think together we form one really cool all-star.
Well, speaking of the all-star game, if anyone missed it last week, Pekka Rinne was added to the all-star game along with PK Subban and Peter Laviolette. So the Preds will be well represented down in Tampa, Florida for the NHL all-star game coming up Sunday, January 28th, you'll be able to hear the All-Star game right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Yeah, I mean, it should be a fun event. And like you said, the Preds are well represented. Not the first time that any of those guys have done this, but I think really, especially for me, since the format's been changed to 3-on-3, it's just more exciting to watch. I think we got to a point a couple years ago where it was just kind of monotonous going through the same thing every year. And you could tell the players, I mean, there's almost zero interest in playing defense. Final scores would be, 21-19 and very little effort. It was tough to watch, to be honest with you. And I think that this new way that they're going about it right now with the 3-on-3 is a great change to it. Obviously, you get a cash prize if you win as well, so that adds a little incentive to it as well. But I really like what they've done with it in the last couple of years.
Yeah, I honestly couldn't agree more. I thought, a few years ago, we actually got to witness it for the first time in Nashville, and we all got to cover that. And that, it was amazing. It was such a boost of fresh air into that into the All-Star weekend, because quite honestly, the game before that was just a joke. Guys are laughing. And, it's good to have fun, but for an entertainment standpoint, it's zero entertainment value for that for me. The skills competition was always been pretty, pretty solid. But the 3-on-3 and the way they separate into divisions now, you see the guys actually trying. The goalies have a chance. Everyone's battling, and they're not going 100%. There's not much body contact, but just the level of competition and the entertainment value is way better.
So the Preds are back at it tomorrow night against the Vegas Golden Knights, and earlier today they returned to practice. Now there was some good news and some bad news. Do you guys want the good news first or the bad news first?
Let's start with good.
Bad. I take the bad first.
Well, let's do bad first then. Switch it around.
Okay. This is paper.
Hammer us. It's Monday. Yeah. Just give us the bad first.
All right. So the bad news today at practice, Victor Arvidsson did leave early. According to Thomas Willis on Twitter, Victor Arvidsson helped off ice at Preds practice by two trainers not putting weight on his leg. Immediately, Twitter went into a frenzy over, how bad of news this is for the Preds moving forward. We obviously have no idea what the extent is, how bad he's hurt, but never a good sign to see someone like Victor Arvidsson go down like that at practice.
Yeah, especially now when you're already missing a top guy in Philip Forsberg. It's tough to see Victor Arvidsson go down and, without knowing exactly how long or if at all he's going to be out as far as game time is concerned. It's tough to kind of diagnose how bad this is going to be for this team, but there's no question, especially in a practice. Like, it's one thing to go down in a game where you're out there competing, you're trying to win, but in a practice, I think sometimes even for the coaching staff, that's a little bit tougher to swallow because you're going up against your own teammates. There's nothing really on the line at practice. So tough news for the Predators today, but hopefully for Preds fans' sake, he's not out too long, or maybe he's even ready to go tomorrow. We just don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking Philip Forsberg down, terrible news. They have enough depth, to withstand that injury, but You lose your second best goal scorer in Victor Arvidsson. Like, you know, Robbie said, in practice, that's disheartening. Who knows what the diagnosis is going to be, but that's tough. You can't just, you know, you can't just recover those goals and that offensive output that both of those guys bring. One of them, this team's obviously more than capable of enduring. I think the way the team's built, they're still going to be okay without either of these guys, but it definitely presents a big hole in the lineup with both of those guys potentially out.
Yeah, because then you have to start shifting everything around. I mean, Forsberg is already out, so you had to make some adjustments there. And for the most part, they've tried to keep Johansson and Arvidsson together for the most part this year. And if he's out for any time at all, obviously that's going to be different. You're going to have Johansson with two line mates that he's probably not anywhere near as familiar with as he is with Forsberg and Arvidsson. So it's tough news for the Predators. I do agree with Chris. I think when you take a look at this team as a whole, they have so much depth. I don't think it's going to be catastrophic for them. But there's no question, when you're missing arguably your two most talented goal scorers, that's going to be a problem at some point. So hopefully for Preds fans, they're back sooner rather than later.
And once again, we don't know the extent of the injury. So maybe it's nothing. Maybe it's something something similar to Philip Forsberg. We have no idea what the extent of the injury he suffered at practice today is. But like you guys said, I mean, Victor Arvidsson is so good. And we saw last year just what kind of effect he had. Every line that he was on was consistently the best line throughout the season. And Victor Arvidsson early on in the first half of the season was certainly proving that he was worth that big contract that he got in the offseason.
Yeah, I think, you know, everybody was wondering after his, you know, his goal differential from his first to second year, if he's going to be that 30 goal scorer. I don't know if he'll be, you know, a 30, 31 goal scorer, but, you know, he's a legit 20 to 30 goal scorer. And for the price and the term that they signed him for, the Preds got a bargain, I think, in Victor Arvidsson. And he's one of those guys that when he's in the lineup, he has that contagious effect on everybody. His work ethic, he brings, you know, we all see the RV hustle every single game, puts his body on the line. He's in front of the net, jumping in front of goalies, going into, you know, all the battle areas. He's just a fearless player, penalty killing. You just put him in any situation, and those types of players just have an effect on the rest of the team, the way they play. So it will be very interesting to see if, you know, anything comes of this injury. Like you said, hopefully it's nothing, but if it is, we're going to need a lot more guys to step up and fill those voids.
Now, the good news from practice today, this is Preds Insiders ESPN 102.5 The Game, Ryan Porth alongside Chris Mason and Robbie Stanley. The good news from practice today was that Philip Forsberg stepped onto the ice. He was skating on his own, and it's good that 2.5 weeks into the 4 to 6 week diagnosis for the upper body injury that Forsberg sustained back on December 29th, it's good that we're finally seeing him on the ice now.
Yeah, we talked about it when he got hurt. If there was ever a time where he was going to get hurt and you knew he was going to miss a month, right now is probably the best time to do it. You get that bye week, you're off for a week without playing any games, and then you've got the All-Star break coming up as well. So timing-wise, this may work out pretty well for the Predators. Obviously, great news to see him back on the ice, even if he is just skating by himself. That means he's out there. The injury is recovering. It's getting better. So if he's on the 4 week end of that range that they originally laid out, I mean, that's best case scenario for the Preds. I think it works out pretty well. So especially now, if Arvidsson's out for any length of time at all, if you can get Forsberg back relatively quickly, that's going to be a huge boost for this team.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. We covered this and talked about before about if you're going to have an injury to your best player, this is the best month. Yep. And the best time in the season. And, you know, if you're looking at the glass half full kind of stuff, he's going to get a rest. He's going to be not miss as many games, obviously. And the fact that it's an upper body injury, he's able to skate, get on the ice, keep his conditioning, and they can monitor that as he recovers from his injury. So that is a positive for sure. Seeing him back on the ice and skating alone, that's anytime you're on the ice, that's a good sign things are trending up. But, you know, hopefully sooner than later on that one too, because, you know, 4 to 6 and upper body, you never know what's going on, but at least he's on the ice. He's getting the conditioning he needs.
Absolutely. Well, the Preds are back at it tomorrow night against the Vegas Golden Knights. The third meeting this season between the Preds and Golden Knights. And C-Mace, I want to start with you on this. Vegas has taken the first two meetings, the first time in a shootout here in Nashville back in early December. And then obviously we know that January 2nd out in Sin City, Vegas looked pretty impressive in a 3-0 win over the Preds. In your mind, Chris, how are the Golden Knights doing this as an expansion team?
Well, I think, you know, as an expansion team, the players that they had to pick from, you know, you go back to Predator expansion era, and they're picking from, you know, third, fourth liners, guys, sixth, seventh, eighth D-man. These guys had an opportunity to pick second liner. Obviously, we lost James Neal. They had a lot of great players to pick from. And I think, like everybody, I just kept expecting these guys to fall off the map eventually. And they'll probably go through a tough patch at some point, even the best teams do. But I think the way they've just rallied around this expansion tag, they got a great coach. He's very systematic. He's very defensively structured. And I think when you have a bunch of new guys put together, not outcast, because I know teams didn't want to lose any of these players, but essentially you can rally around that as a team. And I'm sure they've embraced the whole Vegas thing. But these guys have some big time players. They're strong on the back end. They have a good goaltender. They play very structured systems. So they come back and they counter on the attack off a transition through the neutral zone. And I just think, like, until I saw them play, I wasn't sure. But now that I've seen them a couple times, I've started watching more games of their games on TV. And they play the right style of hockey built for their team. And they have some guys that are getting opportunities. William Karlsson is a guy that, you know, didn't get much of a chance in Columbus. And he comes in, he's at 23 or something goals this season. Marchessault was another guy. He scored 30 last year. So these guys, and, you know, James Neal, they have some big time players, but they're playing the right way, and they almost play a playoff style brand of hockey during the regular season. And I think, you know, they've caught a lot of teams by surprise, and now teams are starting to figure it out, but they're still winning.
The thing that's jumped out to me is the speed. It's not even just the foot speed either. I mean, they're very quick with the way they move. But it's puck movement. I mean, they're really fast in making their decisions. And I've only watched them a few times this year other than when they played the Predators. But in each game, I think there's a chip on their shoulder that each guy has because, you know, whether they wanted to, their teams wanted to get rid of them or not, that's the way players look at it is, oh, I wasn't good enough for you to protect me. Fine, I'll show you. And that's what you got to do if you're a player. So I think a lot of that goes into it. Same way with their coach. He was fired by Florida last year. He's got a chip on his shoulder. So when you add that with the talent and the speed that they have, I think that's what you're seeing right now is they've totally bought into the system. They're very difficult to play against, especially when they get a lead, because they lock it down really well. And like I said before, it's not just the foot speed that they have. They've moved that puck with a purpose. They move it quickly in transition. And I think it's really caught a lot of teams by surprise. And, you know, we keep waiting for them to fall off. And I agree with Chris. They're going to hit a rough patch at some point. But it's been extremely impressive to watch just how quickly they play the game.
This is Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Ryan Porth in studio tonight, joined by Preds TV analyst Chris Mason and NHL.com's Robbie Stanley. Coming up next, why are we seeing a better version of Pekka Rinne this season compared to last? We'll get into that next. You're listening to ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. On this Monday evening, Ryan Porth in studio tonight, joined by Preds TV analyst Chris Mason, NHL.com's Robbie Stanley, as the Preds are back at it, returning from a bye week tomorrow night against the Vegas Golden Knights, pregame at 6, puck drop at 7, right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. All right, Chris, so before the break, I tease the question, why are we seeing a better version of Pekka Rinne this season compared to last? And when you look at the numbers and the peripheral stats, goals against average, save percentage, they're pretty similar to last season. Goals against average last year was 2.42. This year is 2.43. His save percentage is up a little bit. But the eye test for Pekka Rinne has been better this season. Why?
There's a lot of reasons. And I wish I could show some visuals right now, because I'll do my best to explain it, because him and Ben Vanderklok, they've worked over the last couple of years to try to evolve his game and to make him more of an efficient goaltender. I think you see a lot of the new wave of goaltenders. And I think before Pekka, he's a big, huge guy, 6'5", but he played small in his net. He was hunched over. He got really low. His legs were spread far apart, and he didn't look like he was a 6'5 goaltender. He would get over aggressive on shots coming down the wing. And then we all know those scramble saves. Pekka's one of the best athletes in this game. So he has the ability to scramble back and make those desperation saves. But this year, over the past couple of years, they've really worked on getting his body upright. So he looks bigger in the net. His legs are a little closer together, and that makes it easier to go east-west. You don't have to play out as far, and it gives you the ability to be in every save, every situation. You don't have to move as far. So it just affords him the ability to be more consistent. I think you see in his game, he's in complete control. There's a sense of calmness in his game this year. I think that's we've gradually seen that over the last couple years. But all these intangibles, and you put them together, and the transformation that he's made this last year, and this is the biggest jump that I've noticed is this season. I think you started to see it at the end of last season. It's kind of gradually come into effect here, but this will afford him a couple extra years in the NHL. It's not as taxing on his body. He's thinking the game a lot more, and the way that he's even just standing in the net, and the way that they've kind of changed his game and his style, it just affords him the ability. It buys him more time. He can get places quicker, and it's not going to be as hard on him. So he just mentally, I think he's in a great spot, and you can just see the confidence in the net. And I think these adjustments will end up letting Pekka play at an elite level for a lot longer.
And Robbie, I know off air we've talked a lot this season about how Pekka just looks zoned in, and he's carried that over from the Stanley Cup playoffs last year, where he was absolutely dynamite in carrying the Preds all the way to the Stanley Cup final.
Yeah, he was. And I think Chris hit on something that I've noticed too, and I'm nowhere near as much of an expert on this as he is, but efficiency is the thing that's really stood out to me. I mean, if you've watched Pekka at all over the last decade, you see all these highlight reel saves of him scrambling out of the net. He's diving back. He's getting a stick on it, getting the edge of his glove on it, whatever the case may be. And you haven't seen a whole lot of that this year, but that's because he hasn't had to do it. He's been in the net. He hasn't been sliding around all over the place. So I think that's been something that's been really important for him, because he does have that big frame. He is 6'5". And if you keep yourself in the net, I think that has done a really good job for his game of not making it as taxing. And you're, like he said, you're in every save. And I think I've even noticed that this year with just how efficient he looks in net. It's been really a huge transformation, in my opinion, from where he was even 2 years ago at this point. I think it's almost totally different.
Yeah, and you know, to add on to that, I think having a partner like Juuse Saros, the way he plays like that, he's so efficient. Obviously, he doesn't have the stature of Pekka, so he has to get his center mass in the shooting lane every time. So you have to figure out how to navigate around the crease. And I think Pekka has definitely done that. And the efficiency part of it that Robbie was talking about this year is by far the best that I've seen Pekka. You know, those desperation saves that he'd make a couple, and then, you know, maybe a puck would end up in the net. Now he's sitting there waiting for pucks to come and hit him. So he's able to cover those rebounds, and you don't see as many of those amazing, he's out of the wide open net and he comes flying across, diving and throwing a piece of his body. He's still capable of doing that, but the way that he's changed his game, it just gives them the ability to be more consistent every game, night in and night out.
I think you've seen it in the shootout this year too. I mean, there have been times where you can tell the shooter is waiting for Rene to move, and he never moves. And by that, the shooter gets in so tight, he just puts it right off his pad because he hasn't moved. I think it's really had an effect in the shootout as well, because, like Chris said, he's just waiting for the puck. He's not being over-aggressive, and I think that's been huge for him. I really do.
This is Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Ryan Porth in studio, joined by Chris Mason and Robbie Stanley, as the Preds are back at it tomorrow night against the Vegas Golden Knights. Now, Chris, you brought up the name Juuse Saros, and his first month of the season was not ideal. It wasn't the best start for him. And ever since he's gone back down to Milwaukee to get some reps and get some playing time, he's looked a lot more like the goaltender that we saw in the first half of last season, when he was absolutely dynamite and, you know, completely new to the league and nobody really had a book on him. And what is the biggest difference that you've seen from Juuse Saros since he's been getting that playing time in Milwaukee and now winning some games for the Preds when he's been called upon?
Well, you know, I think at the start of seasons, you know, the first few games kind of get blown out of proportion because it's the start. It's, you know, the first games of a new season, and especially you want to see how, you know, your shiny new toy Juuse Saros is going to respond from a great rookie season. But I honestly don't think the Preds really played well in front of him, and you know, even when he was winning, he was having to put in some amazing performances. But the biggest thing with Juuse after he got that game time in Milwaukee, I just, you know, you see that confidence. Every time, he's only 22 years old, So you got to get him games. You got to make him play because he's used to playing. You know, it's a big adjustment when you play a game. You know, you maybe have a tough game, then you got to sit on the bench for 2 weeks and you don't know when you're playing. And all of a sudden you're in a game again. You have to try to recapture that feeling. It's not automatic when you go to a game that you're going to feel good in there. But I think, you know, them getting games in Milwaukee, you saw when he came back in Dallas, you could just tell he felt comfortable in the net right off the bat, covering pucks, catching pucks, the way he's playing it. There was no feeling out process. And I think ever since they did that, we've seen a different goaltender, the guy that we saw last year. And he's been amazing. And he's honestly, and I'm not just saying this, when I saw him at camp a couple years ago, I was blown away by his skill set and the way he moves around the net. And, you know, he's 5'10 or 5'11 or whatever he is, one of the shortest guys. But he's the guy who he plays big. You know, for a small guy, he's upright. There's a little bit of room up top. But this year, he hasn't given up as many goals. I think at the last part of last year, they started, picking those spots over the shoulder. And you see these guys, if they have time, they're going to hit that on anybody. But he's done a lot better job as the season's gone on this year of taking away that that top portion of that because he's aware of that. But he's an elite talent.
And then UC Saros, through 42 games, has made 10 starts, which means Pekka-Rinne is on pace for 62 this season, which would be one more than last season. And Robbie, when I look at the second half of the season, which the unofficial second half starts tomorrow, looking at Pekka-Rinne's number of starts and keeping him fresh for the playoffs is mightily important for the Preds.
I think it is. I think you saw how important it was last year when he was fresh heading into the playoffs. I mean, he just totally dominated the first three rounds of the playoffs and then was a little shaky in Pittsburgh in the cup final. But, I mean, if you can get him rested and ready to go by playoff time this year, I think we saw last year how much of a difference that truly can make. And you take a look at the schedule and with the way that Saros has been playing, I think you're going to see a lot more starts for Saros in the second half of the year, especially if they continue to win. I mean, you're in a different situation heading into the second half this year than you were a year ago. I mean, you had to fight, scratch and claw just to make the playoffs. And I'm not trying to say that it's not going to be difficult this year in the second half of the season, but, you know, when you're near the top of the standings in the Western Conference, you got a little bit different of a mindset than you would if you're just trying to scratch and claw your way to a wild card spot. So I do think the starts for Saros will go up in the second half of the season, and it is mightily important. If you can get Pekka-Rinne rested, fresh, ready to go once the playoffs start, he showed last year how much of a difference that could be.
Yeah, it did, and I think this was the first time maybe since Pekka's been here that they've ever been able to really do that, and
I agree.
That's because of UC Saros and the way he played last season and now this season, even the last road trip. That Phoenix game is probably a game they would have given Pekka any other time because they had the day in between the games. But the fact that UC's playing at the level, they can just slot him in there. And I think, like Robbie said, the big thing, this coaching staff, they're big picture. So, you know, they sat guys at the end of the season, even when they could have jumped a couple spots the last games because they believe in their team and they have a plan. And I think going down, if they can, like Robbie said again, if you can continue to win, you can manage those starts a little more. And it's not as necessary to play Pekka because the best hockey I think that he's ever played this season, but going into last year's playoffs, that rest made such a huge difference. And I think they realize that and they're going to continue to put UC in there as much as they can.
So there are two pro sports teams in the city of Nashville. One of them can't find stability at head coach. The other can. We'll get into that next. This is Preds Insiders. Ryan Porth joined by Chris Mason and Robbie Stanley on this Monday night, and you're listening to ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back to the show, ESPN 102.5 The Game. This is Preds Insiders. Ryan Porth here, joined in studio tonight by Chris Mason and Robbie Stanley. Before the break, I teased the question, or teased the statement, of how there are two pro sports teams here in town, and one can't really find a coach on a consistent basis, and the other can. The Tennessee Titans got rid of Mike Mularkey today, and that's kind of been the water cooler talk. And that made me think of Peter Laviolette here in Nashville. He's in the middle of his fourth season, and he has this team on a track for long-term success while getting the most out of his team. And when you think of other coaches in the past, maybe like a Mike Keenan or Ken Hitchcock, who's currently with the Dallas Stars, a lot of those type coaches burn out after a few years after getting the most out of their team, and then they get fired because the act wears thin. And when you think of Peter Laviolette, I don't know if that happened in Carolina or in Philadelphia when those two franchises let go of Lavi. And, you know, in the case of Philadelphia, they fired him after just three games. But Robbie, when you look at Peter Laviolette and the job that he's doing, it just seems like he's getting the most out of his team through the first half of the season.
Yeah, and I think players respond much better when you're winning, and they've been doing a whole lot of winning since he's taken over. And I think if you talk to players in the locker room, the one word that always comes up when you're asking about Peter Laviolette is motivator, and that's what he does. He's very good at pushing the right buttons and getting his team to play on a nightly basis. I mean, sure, throughout an 82-game season, there have been times where the effort hasn't been there where they want it to be. That happens in hockey. It's very difficult to bring your A game each night. But for the most part, Peter Laviolette has done a very good job, in my opinion, of motivating his team. And now they have so much talent that he's done a very good job of utilizing this talent. I think he's maximized some of the offense that we've seen. And that was kind of the big reason for hiring Peter Laviolette. When you think back to when he was hired, they wanted to be a more offensive team. They wanted to be more explosive. I think they've been able to accomplish that, particularly with the growth of Forsberg. That certainly helps with a younger player coming in like he did in Laviolette's first year. But just from an overall scheme standpoint, they're still very good on defense, but they have that scoring punch that they were missing for so many years when Barry Trotz was here. And you know, they had some good scoring teams with Barry Trotz too, don't get me wrong. But I just think the offensive-minded approach that Laviolette brings to his game, I think, has really served this team well. And I think they have not only the forwards to do it, I think they have the perfect defense core to do it as well. So when you add in all those pieces, I think it's just a very complimentary way of playing for this team, and I think he's done a great job.
Yeah, those are some great points, and same thing. I've talked to players, and once I stopped playing and got into this analyst role, I started paying more attention to the dynamics of a team and coaching decisions. So I took a lot more of an interest in that, and I asked a lot of the guys, like, what makes Peter Laviolette such a good coach? And Robbie touched on it. They all said he's the best motivator. They said, I've never seen anybody who can year after year, game after game, change his message and tailor it to something that doesn't get old, where, you know, after he's done in the speech, the guys want to go out there and rip guys' heads off. They're so, they fight, he just gets inside and fires them up. But I think, you know, I noticed the evolution of this organization, and I think he's really created a culture of expectations, of winning. These guys have such a strong belief system. I know a lot of the guys, I played with them, they have a lot of great people that are leaders in that dressing room, and everybody's bought in. They have such a unified message. I noticed, you know, I'm sure you guys did too, last in the season, in the postseason, just how much resolve this team had. You know, great game, bad game, tough break, they, you know, whatever happened, they just were, just seemed so unified and had that message. And he's, the coach is the one that sets the tone. And he creates that environment inside the dressing room, and the guys feed off that. And I just think that, like Robbie touched on, he's the perfect guy with the combination of players and the style of hockey that he wants to play, that attack, you know, mentality, the defense joining in the rush. And he's got great skaters there, obviously the best defensive core in the National Hockey League. He's got some, you know, fast, creative, talented forwards, but they don't give up. They don't compromise their defense. These guys get back and they have a system and they have a standard. And I think now the expectations that this team has created under him, I think hand in hand, you just have a great combination.
Now, in all your years of playing in the National Hockey League, and I don't expect you to name names, but you've played on a lot of teams over a lot of years. Was there ever a situation during a season where the coach wasn't getting, where you guys knew the coach wasn't getting the most out of you guys, and he maybe wasn't connecting with the players in the dressing room, and it was having maybe a negative impact on that dressing room?
Yeah, I've definitely had seasons where, you know, you've had a situation where, you know, the coach wasn't necessarily, I would say, a strength of, you know, your team's identity necessarily. And you know, guys, like in any social situation, you have cliques, and certain guys will go off and you know, they'll take that negative angle, and, you know, it really divides a team. And I think when you have a leader like Peter Laviolette, and you trust your leadership group, it's a lot easier to reel those guys in, because if everybody's got that unified message, you can't have a black sheep go off and do whatever they want. And I think I've had a few seasons definitely where there wasn't that wasn't necessarily a strength of the team.
Now, one of the things that Peter Laviolette is always praised about is his decisions in game. Like the other night, Tuesday night, the decision to challenge the offside. Now, that a lot of the credit goes to the video guys for picking that out. But it with the new rule where if you challenge offsides and you don't get it, you end up getting a penalty. In that situation, the game, if he did not get that call to go his way, the game is tied 2-2 and the Oilers get a power play. He wins that challenge and the Preds win the game 2-1. And then you think about a game early December against Boston where things are getting a little hairy for the Preds. They're starting to lose that lead. He takes a timeout, and 20, 30 seconds later, Philip Forsberg scores a back-breaking goal against the Bruins. Peter Laviolette, over the years, just has that knack for making the right decision at the right time in-game.
Well, he's been around these guys so much now where I think he's just got the perfect feel for his team. He knows when to make those timeouts. He knows when to make those challenges. And I think he can kind of see how the flow of a game is going. And, you know, I think maybe a misconception of him sometimes is, you know, he's very passionate. He's fiery all the time. Maybe sometimes that can wear on players. He also knows how to lighten the mood, too, which I think is very important, especially when a season where it's so long like hockey is. I mean, you saw him in the Christmas sweater in Dallas. I mean, you saw last year in the locker room hanging up those boards and those photos of just different big moments throughout the season and kind of the dog on a bone mentality stuff. So wearing Titans jerseys through the games. I mean, I just think it's little things like that where, yes, he's intense. He's very passionate. You know what you're going to get out of him every night behind the bench. But I also think he knows how to connect with players. And in today's day and age, if you can't connect with your players, it's very difficult to get them to buy into what you're saying every night.
Yeah, 100%. I think, you know, when you're a head coach, you can take, there's a, you know, various different ways to have success. But the way that he does it, he's very inclusive. He brings in other people. He trusts the people around him. You talked about the video coaches. You should see these guys on the plane. They as soon as we get on the plane after a win or loss, they have their computers over. They're going back and forth, talking to each other, going over everything. But he's got a way of managing his players. It's like having a family. You know, there's sometimes when you can come down hard on your kids, and there's other times when you know you got to lay off because that might be the best thing. And he just really has the knack or knowing when to do that and just how to manage the guys if he's been coming on too strong and, you know, keeping things light. And I think that, you know, as a player, as a former player, it's so refreshing to have a guy like that that's, you know, understanding of, you know, the team's situation. And that's going to give him the longevity of a coach where, you know, coaching is probably, you know, the least length of a job you can keep because you do wear out. You mentioned the Hitchcocks, the Keenans, those guys have an effect. And after a certain amount of years, they're done, right? Because guys stop listening and they turn a blind eye. But Peter Laviolette's not that kind of guy. He's aware of these guys. And I just think he's such a master. He's one step ahead. He's calculated. He talked about the timeouts and all those things. He'll change lines. He just has such a good understanding of who he's got in the dressing room.
I think a lot of it's communication too. I mean, you see him all the time talking about, you know, we've talked about the power play if it's struggling. We've talked about all these things. And you know, there are some coaches around the league where right after the game, if something happens, you know, you're hammering a player in the media and you haven't even had a conversation with a player yet. Peter Laviolette, the players don't mind having those conversations with him because they know that, you know, if you're talking, if he's telling you something, he's not going to go to the media first and just blast you without having that conversation with you first. And I think that goes a long way with players.
Yeah, that's a great point because that's one thing that I've noticed he doesn't do. He doesn't rip his players. He sticks up for his players. He's got their back. And in the dressing room, guys know. They listen to that stuff. Some of them do, some of them don't. But it goes a long way that he's always got their guys back, whether it was a bad play or a bad game or whatever. He has a way of you know, explaining the message how he wants it out there. And he never sewers guys. And believe me, players respect that a lot.
Coming up next on Preds Insiders, we'll take a look at the Preds' defense with the return of Ryan Ellis. Also, should P.K. Subban be considered Norris Trophy this season? All of that and a lot more coming up next. This is Preds Insiders. Ryan Porth joined by Chris Mason and Robbie Stanley on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Last segment here before the Kermit Davis Show as MTSU continues on in their Conference USA season. That's coming up at 7 o'clock right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Ryan Porth alongside Chris Mason and Robbie Stanley talking Preds tonight before they return to action tomorrow night against the Vegas Golden Knights. Pregame at 6, puck drop at 7 on your flagship home of the Nashville Predators right here, ESPN 102.5 The Game. So the last time the Preds played the Vegas Golden Knights, Ryan Ellis made his return out in Vegas, and it's only been a small sample size. But Robbie, you asked Peter Laviolette about Ryan Ellis after their 2-1 win against the Edmonton Oilers, and Peter Laviolette had a really good answer, and here's what he had to say.
I think he looks better every game. If you talk to him, he feels more confident every game. I can tell you that having him back in the lineup and in the room has settled our team down defensively. We're back down in an area defensively of 23. This is before maybe somebody pulls the goalie, where it's kind of like we're taking on the hits again and in total defense mode, but 23 shots against, 25 shots against, where, you know, for a while there at the end of that run where we were 16-2-2, you know, we're giving up 38 shots and 42 shots and 44 shots. And while everybody needs to play good defense, there's no question that Ryan Ellis has an impact in how we play defense. So to get him back in that mix and feeling better and more confident about his game is really important to our team.
That was Preds head coach Peter Laviolette after last Tuesday's win against Edmonton talking about Ryan Ellis. And Robbie, he brought up the shots allowed aspect of the return of Ryan Ellis. In the four games that Ryan Ellis has played now, the Preds have averaged 27.7 shots allowed. In the previous 38 games, that number was at 32.8.
Yeah, I mean, it's just been a huge difference. And like he touched on, I think a lot of that has been they've had the lead so often that you're in defense mode. The other team's pressing really hard to get back in the game. But there's no question getting Ryan Ellis back. I really like the phrase that Laviolette used there. It's settled our team down. I think it really has. I mean, because you take a look at the lineup before he was out, and Matthias Ekholm did a great job with Roman Josi. I don't think there's any question about that. But he's playing on his offside, and I don't think people understand how difficult of a transition that is as a defenseman to play on your offside. You've got Alexei Emelin playing with P.K. Subban, and while, like I said, I think he did a great job as well, he's not a guy that's a top four defenseman. So you get your top four defensemen back, you're able to slot them in roles not only where they're comfortable in, but where they belong. And then you've got a third pairing now that has been Alexei Emelin and Yannick Weber. I think it's just really stabilized the way the defense plays. They're more comfortable. They've got a lot of familiarity with each other, especially that top four with the way they went through the playoffs last year. So I think Ryan Ellis, even though he's probably not back up to full speed as of yet, I think just his presence back in that lineup has paid huge dividends for this team.
Yeah, and it couldn't have come at a better time, losing Philip Forsberg. So they're able to endure that even more with Ryan Ellis, and you have those top four who are the best top four in the NHL, in my opinion, hands down. I don't think there's another team that's even close. And you have those guys on the ice essentially for half the game, you know, a pair. So it's from his first game to his second game, he jumped leaps and bounds, and you could see the difference, you know, defensively, when especially now if anything happens with Victor Arvidsson, they're going to have to rely on those guys even more to shut down and play that defensive style. And all those guys in the back end, they have the ability. They can join the play. We've all seen their offensive upside, but they're great defensively too. And that's the big thing. Like Robbie said, everyone's in their right spot now. Matthias is back with PK. They were absolutely phenomenal last season, especially in the postseason. And then Ellis and Josi, these guys have a great history together. So everyone's sitting in the right spot. And that's a good thing going in the second half, because games get a lot tighter down the stretch. You're not going to see as many of those 6-4, 7-6 kind of games, 5-4. It's going to be those 2-1, 3-2 defensive battles when one of those situations, one goal here or there, is going to sway the difference. So it's huge having those guys back.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And you know, the closer you get to playoffs, just the more intense it gets as far as the regular season is concerned. And I think it's important that he's back in the early part of January. That way, you know, this time a month from now, we're not even going to be talking about the injury he had. He's just going to be slotted right in the lineup. They're going to be clicking on all cylinders. Fingers crossed that they stay healthy. So I think it's really important, like you said, with Forsberg and Arvidsson out, to have that defense back there where you know you're not going to give up those quality scoring chances. And also you can add offensively. I mean, that's something that I don't think has been talked about a lot either, is, you know, the Preds' power play has been great all year. And you can make an argument their biggest weapon on that power play is Ryan Ellis, and he's been out of the lineup the whole year. So how is that going to affect this team as they get more and more comfortable with him back on those power play units as well?
If you're just joining us here on Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, Victor Arvidsson did leave practice today as he was helped off the ice, according to Thomas Willis, with the Predators. He didn't put any weight on his leg as he was helped off the ice by two Preds trainers. So fingers crossed with Victor Arvidsson. We do not know the extent of that injury that he may have sustained today at practice. They're already without Philip Forsberg. He did skate on his own towards the end of practice. But without Philip Forsberg, the Preds' leading point getter is P.K. Subban. And P.K. Subban, through this first half of the season, has looked phenomenal. He's looked a lot more comfortable in his role compared to the first half last year, where he was just breaking in with the Preds, a new team, a new city. And P.K. Subban, right now in this first half, Chris, has just been absolutely phenomenal. And he's been kind of juggling different defense pairmates, whether it be Alexei Emelin or now it's Matthias Ekholm. He's been getting the job done no matter who he's been playing with.
He's been absolutely great. And I think, you know, even with the Ryan Ellis back in the lineup, I think you're starting to see PK jump in the play more, skate the puck. But I think when he came to Nashville, like you said, there's that adjustment period. And I think he figured out here, he's got a lot of other support on the back end. He doesn't have to carry the puck every time. They got lots of guys. They have those four guys that are more than capable. He's just had a real good understanding, and his game's evolved. I talked to Hal Gill about him all the time when he was in Montreal. He has that defensive ability. He's always had that, but he felt the pressure that he had to go and take chances up ice and a little more than he has to here. And I think he's just really settled into one of the premier shutdown defensemen, and with the ability to score goals. I mean, he's been great on the power play this year. He's got 9 goals, I think. So he's getting that done as well, and he's been consistently doing it since the start of this season. So you talk about Norris Trophy candidate. Obviously, we get to see him every game. I haven't seen the other guys as much. Klingberg, I think, in Dallas is a guy that we talked about in the break. And, you know, Victor Hedman until he got hurt. But I definitely think he's got to be in that conversation.
Yeah, if you look at ESPN.com, they had a midseason awards, kind of a story, a prediction panel with Greg Wyshynski. And he listed Drew Doughty as the favorite for the Norris Trophy, followed by Victor Hedman and John Klingberg. But Robbie, before we came on the air tonight, you thought P.K. Subban should be in consideration for the Norris Trophy as well.
I do. I think he's been fantastic. And, you know, one of the things that stood out to me, we all knew the offensive ability he had when he was in Montreal, and you would expect that to transition into this system, and I think it has. I didn't know how good of a shutdown defenseman he was. And I think we really saw it heavily in the playoffs last year. I mean, it was almost impossible to score on Matthias Ekholm and P.K. Subban last year in the playoffs. They were just so good in a shutdown role. So when you're talking about what this award is truly about, what the Norris Trophy is truly about, it's best all-around defenseman. It's not defenseman that scores the most points. It's best all-around defenseman. And I think if you've watched P.K. Subban at all this year, he has to be in that conversation. The problem with that is when you're talking about the Predators' biggest strength in their top four defense, I think that counts against P.K. Subban when people are talking about votes, because nobody ever talks about when they're talking about the Predators nationally, nobody ever says, you know, P.K. Subban's doing a really good job on this team. It's always, man, that top four is really good. And I think sometimes that can have an adverse effect on some individual awards when you have players around you that are as good as that top four defense is.
Well, and think about some of the names that we just listed there. Drew Doughty, Victor Hedman, John Klingberg, another name that has been tossed around in the first half of the season for this conversation for the Norris Trophy is Alex Pietrangelo of the St. Louis Blues. What do all of them have in common? They are by far the number one defenseman on their defense corps. P.K. Subban, like Robbie said, is, you know, he's amongst the core four, which could weigh down his, you know, bring down his Norris Trophy candidacy.
Yeah, I think that definitely has to come in the conversation, you know, be part of it, because like you said, I think Drew Doughty is one of the best in the league too. He's, you know, most average ice time per game, and he's a guy that I forgot about that should definitely be in. But I mean, you're right. Every time anyone talks about the Nashville Predators, it's the top four. It's how good these top four guys are. So individually, they don't get as many accolades as they should. And we all know Roman Josi. I think he's going to win a Norris Trophy by the end of his career. Yeah. And I think Nashville, for whatever reason, I think after the last year's playoff has really helped bring attention to this team, especially from the Canadian media nationally. But it just seems the players here just get kind of ranked underneath the other top defensemen because of you know, just being in Nashville and not getting that Canadian or national media attention. Hopefully that's going
to
change.
Yeah, I think it's starting to change a little bit. It's much better now than it used to be 3 or 4 years ago. I remember times when Shea Weber, in my opinion, just far and away was the best defenseman in the league, and he would never win the Norris Trophy. He'd be either the runner-up or he was in third, and you were just looking at at things going on. Like, do you guys watch these games? Like, have you seen the type of defenseman that he is? So I do think there's certainly some of that. And like I said before, I mean, there are nights where PK Subban's not the best defenseman on his own team. I mean, there's Roman Josi, there's Matthias Ekholm, there's Ryan Ellis. So I think it's a lot tougher when you're in a situation like that to win individual awards, but it's a whole lot easier to win some team awards when you're in a situation like that.
Absolutely. Well, one of the big reasons why they were in the Stanley Cup final is because of that core four that was so dominant last season. Since December 13th, PK Subban has 14 points in 13 games, and he leads the team in assists at the midway point. Third in time on ice, he leads the team in minutes on the power play, a power play unit that has been pretty effective so far this season. So PK Subban has without a doubt been one of the best players on this Preds team this season, and you'll be able to see him in the All-Star game as the captain of the Central Division. I appreciate my two All-Stars for coming in for Preds Insiders tonight. Chris Mason, Preds TV analyst, Robbie Stanley of NHL.com. Guys, I appreciate you coming in. A lot of fun.
Had a lot of fun, fellas.
Yeah, thanks, buddy. You guys are all-stars in my book, no question.
Aw, thanks, Chris.
Oh, look at that.
Oh, yeah.
Well, coming up next, it is the Kermit Davis Show at 7 o'clock right here, ESPN 102.5 The Game, and the Preds are back at it tomorrow night against the Vegas Golden Knights, pregame at 6, puck drop at 7, right here on your home of Smashville, ESPN 102.5 The Game. For Chris Mason, for Robbie Stanley, I'm Ryan Porth. Next Preds Insiders is Wednesday night at 6 o'clock right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.